Hi, this is Dave Renight with Cutty That Switch, a series that looks at the intersection between theater and poetry and the edgelands and the wilderness. In this episode, I'm going to read an essay from a book that I'm in called Latinx Actor Training, edited by Cynthia Santos de Cure and Micah Espinosa. The essay is called The Five Elements. And I was graciously asked by Micah and Cynthia to contribute to their book for chapter two, which is the acting chapter. So the book is divided into two sections. One of them is History and Theory, which is part one. And part two is just acting, that's what it's called. It ranges a great deal. It talks about casting and directing and so forth, but the larger rubric is acting. So my essay is called The Five Elements, and it begins like this. Practice hall. I'm sitting in a practice hall. We are working on a new play. The actors are parsing through the complex and sharp interior to exterior turns in the play text. They are writing the music of the work, applying their physical and emotional instruments to the material. I have not asked any of them where they have trained as actors. It is clear to me that some of them perhaps have worked on classical texts before because of the way they handle phrasing and understand breath control, but they could have equally trained in spoken word and hip-hop, which also require a sensitive and deft understanding of these same things. As a playwright, I am a language architect. My languages are vocal, physical, and visual, and weaving throughout them is a strong and intentional oral dramaturgy, as in the sound of something. On the vocal end, sometimes the work mixes languages. On the more overt side of this, could be interpreted in the way I wield English and its many variants, and Spanish and sometimes Spanglish. But I also work with the languages of texting, slang, and even invented words. Actors who work with me on a regular basis know my vocabularies and can swoop and glide and move through my text with precision, boldness, vulnerability, dexterity, and grace. But I often ask myself, what is at the heart of what actors do or are asked to do? The histories of acting and its training tend to be impacted by the histories of playwriting and production. Acting and playwriting go hand in hand. Writers write for actors. Actors develop their instruments through the range and variety of the many materials upon which they work. For example, the history of the poetic realist playwriting of 1950s U.S. dramatists cannot be divorced from the rise of U.S. training approaches to interpreting Stanislavski's method. Similarly, the work of dramatists in the United States between the late 1990s and into the first decade of the 21st century has been greatly impacted by elements of the Suzuki method, and more specifically, Ant Bogart's interpretation of Mary Overly's viewpoints. So when one is looking at and thinking through the works of Latinx dramatists from the United States, perhaps it is useful to consider what acting methods imprinted upon themselves and their works. Forebears. Luis Valdez and Maria Irene Fornes are often considered the parents of sorts of U.S. Latinx playwriting. And thus, one could argue, of U.S. Latinx acting. The work that Valdez did with Teatro Campesino in the Central Valley of California, and later, through his collaborations with Anglo-dominant, cishet, patriarchal, hierarchical institutions like the Mark Taper Theater in Los Angeles, that premiered his legendary play, Zoot Suit, with an all-Latine cast, influenced the movement of Latine West Coast theatrical writing and production. Among the more significant playwrights and theater makers who can trace their lineage to Valdez are Luis Alfaro, Culture Clash, José Luis Valenzuela, and Evelina Fernández. Fornés's initially downtown, New York-centered, but geographically and temporally expansive work on both the East Coast and West Coast of the United States in the late 1960s through 1990s impacted, of course, not only a generation or two of playwrights who trained with her and or saw and read her works, but also Latine and non-Latine actors who worked with her as director on her fiercely individual, formerly adventurous, rigorous plays. It is useful to note, however, that Fornés was deeply influenced by acting guru Lee Strasberg, whose classes on his interpretation of Stanislavski's method she attended for a time at the actor's studio. She borrowed and adapted these techniques into writing exercises that became the foundation of her own pedagogical work with playwrights. In other words, what is important to consider is the fact that Latine and Latinx actors and writers are not merely drawing from one cultural and aesthetic well. How could they, when Latine and Latinx is in and of itself a term that encompasses a vast range of people who trace their origins and heritages from different countries in the Americas and their specific micro and macro cultures, ethnicities, castes, and the political construction of race, languages, and more. Identifying and or locating a singular Latine Latinx acting, quote, method, thus, is something of a minefield and one prone to the following kinds of stereotypical generalizations. Latine, Latinx actors, light-skinned, indigenous, and Afro-Latinx both, are hotter, more expressive of their sexuality on stage. They are more in their bodies than Anglo or other POC actors. They are more connected to ritual and ritualistic modes of articulation than Anglo actors. They are all bilingual and therefore can code-switch easily. They are all steeped in the stylistic modes of telenovela. Okay, obviously there's some exaggeration here, but not much. I have been in casting sessions where all five of the above have been said, and not just by Anglo, politically white creative types, but also by Latine Latinx ones. How to break these stereotypes and the violence they cause actors and creative teams in both training academies and institutions, as well as the industry? It is not easy. But one way to begin is to think about the kinds of works that Latine Latinx playwrights have been making for the last 30 years in the United States. Years that have seen not only the rise of Lin-Manuel Miranda, Kiara Alegría Udes, and Tania Saracho, but also among many others, Nilo Cruz, Eduardo Machado, Migdalia Cruz, John Leguizamo, Shiri Moraga, Jose Rivera, Naomi Izuka, Christopher Diaz, Octavio Solis, Luis Alfaro, and Karen Zacarias. Distinguishing factors of the very wide range of works by this extremely eclectic group of writers are a buoyant, swaggering use of languages, a delight in the musicality of speech, a highly visual, conceptual approach to examining the plasticity of the stage, an often raucous, raw sense of humor, an emphasis on earthy realism touched with elements of the fantastical and supernatural, a strong commitment to social justice, and a mischievous and sometimes feverish syncretization of transcultural and or interdisciplinary theatrical elements. Drawing on the energies, say, of professional wrestling signifiers in Christopher Diaz's The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity, or the hip-hop inflections and structures in Hamilton, requires different skill sets and approaches from performers than, say, working on one of Annie Baker's plays, which often demand that actors work in minutely rendered realistic register. Let us consider then how the five stereotypical elements listed earlier can be dealt with in casting sessions, practice halls, and in performance. Hotness. There is a joke among US Latine Latinx playwrights that goes something like this. Did you hear the one about the magic realist play? Oh, you mean how all Latinx plays are described? While it is true that some US Latine Latinx playwrights openly embrace the modes and tenets of the kind of magic realism associated with the works of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Isabel Allende, Laura Esquivel, and Alejo Carpentier, many do not. Yet the assumption, or should I say labeling, by the theater industry and sometimes its audiences as well, is that this mode of writing applies to all Latinx playwrights, regardless of the kind of work they are making. Interesting to note here that authors like Salman Rushdie, Haruki Murakami, Angela Carter, Octavia Butler, Mark Halperin, Neil Gaiman, and Toni Morrison, all of whom also write and or wrote magic realist works, often do not get mentioned as influences on US Latinx playwrights. There is a curious Latinx-only authorial lineage leveled at Latinx playwrights, as if writers only read and are influenced by works made by other Latinx authors. The narrow focus aimed at many Latinx playwrights affects in turn Latinx actors. The expression of sensuality is not obviously a unique trait exclusive to Latinx actors, but often in practice halls and especially in casting sessions, the word is bandied about when describing the Latinx affect needed for a role, especially a role in a play written by a Latinx playwright, a play that may or may not be magic realist or demand an intellectual and corporeal understanding of playing inside a story world that breaks the divide between material and spiritual realms and or has elements of the fantastical coexisting alongside those that are mundane. Headshots are placed upon a table or screened online, and video reels are browsed through, searching for the quote-unquote hot, read sensual, Latinx performer. This kind of labeling stems from a settler colonialist othering of Latinx roles in the history of U.S. theater, and especially Hollywood films. A high-profile Latine cis female and cis male bombshells embodied by Rita Hayworth, Maria Montes, Dolores del Rio, Ricardo Montalban, and Fernando Lamas in the 1940s and 1950s, and the current bombshells of the last 20 years, Jennifer Lopez, Salma Hayek, Antonio Banderas, and Ricky Martin, have marked the imaginations of the casting industry in the United States, which has tended to be white-figured and centered, and have forced Latinx actors to be placed in a position where they are perceived as either confronting, conforming to, or rebelling against the stereotype. In casting for the theater and or in training actors for the stage and live performance, this heavy marker has often meant that Latine actors are judged not for their abilities at the outset, but rather for their hotness. Now, this is not always true. And yes, blockbuster shows like In the Heights have helped dispel some of the loaded expectations which Latinx actors walk into casting and training situations. But curiously, the hot factor lingers as an instant label that Latinx actors need live up to. Even America Ferrera, whose first starring role on film was in Josefina Lopez's Real Women Have Curves, a film that placed a plus-size Latina at the center of the narrative, has had to deal with being applauded in the industry for slimming down, and therefore more viable as a leading actor. Think of hotness as the X factor that many Latinx actors must deal with when they walk into auditions and practice halls. Breaking the X factor of hotness as a value ascribed to Latinx actors is as necessary as breaking the magic realist label ascribed to Latinx playwrights. Neither is useful pedagogically or within the industry. It does not allow Latinx actors and writers from being seen fully on their own terms. Latinx actors do not have a sixth sense or special skill they bring to material that makes them more expressive of sensuality than other performers. What some actors may be able to do is replay or reinscribe the hot mama or Latin heartthrob stereotype that casting directors are looking for. A knowingly ironic and complicit playing with the stereotype is different from being locked into a stereotype. Yet both from acting and writing perspectives, it is important to contest and obliterate the damaging restrictions that this stereotype holds. In the body. Culture lives in the body. Who you are, how you grew up, and what your origins and heritages are affect how you speak, move, and behave on stage and in real life. You carry culture with you. As your body is always in evolution and undergoing change, so is how you manifest and radiate as a performer. Owning up to and being free to own up to the cultures from which you spring is crucial for actors as well as writers in the arts. There is no white default or standard American accent that need be lived up to, even if for many years in the industry, these seem to be the case. Respecting and honoring the many yous that exist within you means you will have more to offer the work you encounter on the page and stage as a performer. Being a Latinx actor means being someone that contains multitudes. Being an actor means being someone that contains multitudes. Thus, being allowed to express all of them, given the roles or projects you are working on, means that you are on the path toward artistic and spiritual fulfillment. But just as Latinx actors are not de facto hot just because they're Latinx, neither are they de facto in their body because they are Latinx. Each actor who walks into a room is different. They may share cultural references and even know how to code switch in similar ways, but their life experiences are different. Actors are actors. Some are more expressive with their bodies than others. When actors are training, assumptions made by teachers about someone's innate cultural ability to be expressive are microaggressions that cannot only stop an actor from being seen in a practice room, but also damage their evolution as an artist. Ritual. What makes a Latinx actor a Latinx actor? Now, I say this in all earnestness. Is a Latinx actor someone who is born into or descendant of Latinx people? The answer to this would be yes. Is a Latinx actor always signifying what a collectively agreed upon meaning of Latinx is? No, because there is no one meaning to being Latinx in the world. How then to contend with the role that ritual plays in theater in many Latinx cultures? Let us consider oppression, and more specifically, Eurocentric three-act rising action-centered theatrical narratives. By all accounts, many training programs and conservatories in the United States, the focus of this essay, still tend to privilege in their syllabi the study of works from the canon. An acting student can spend 4 years without hardly ever encountering or working on material that is Latinx. Still, in this country, Hamilton in the Heights and Water by the Spoonful, notwithstanding, it is relatively rare, although this is changing slowly, for actors in training to work on plays by authors from South America, the Caribbean, Mexico, and Central America. One could walk out of a conventional and even highly regarded training program in the United States with barely a smattering of knowledge of and appreciation for the work of major artists from the Americas. This is, of course, due to white supremacy. But these same training programs tend to funnel artists into producing mechanisms in the industry that also replicate this same supremacy. It is a vicious cycle and one that needs to be broken. And this is as true of the world of theater as it is of film. The replication of three-act Hollywood screenwriting rules affects what projects get read, greenlit, and recognized in and by the industry, and what in turn is deemed viable. White supremacy, structural racism, and settler colonialism are at the heart of the tenets of most acting training programs in the United States. As I said earlier in this essay, acting and writing movements go hand in hand. If you train as an actor and all you are trained in and for are in works that fit into the canon, with occasional quote-unquote detours into what may be Boal or Suzuki or perhaps No and Buto theater, then the lens by which you see the world and which your instrument is prepared for is limited. Curiously enough, though, often Latinx actors may find themselves cast in and are working on devised pieces or scripted works by writers Latinx that are built along different lines and conceptual matrices. Indeed, some of the so-called magic realist work that U.S. Latinx writers make are drawing upon or influenced by structures that are indigenous and or West African in origin. Plays that are steeped in circular or spiraling structures and that place a collective protagonist at the center and that often employ speech, song, dance, and call and response as central navigating modes rather than character-driven and plot-driven ones. Syncretic and hybrid works are these, works that reflect the mestizaje, with all the complexities of how the mestizaje came to be, of being Latinx, tend to run counter to most of the work in which U.S. actors are trained. Yet, Latinx actors are often cast in such pieces and expected to know the ritualized nature of much of this kind of work simply because they are Latinx. Troubling this further is the fact that a lot of contemporary text-based work from Latin America and experimental U.S. Latinx writing for live performance specifically are also in turn influenced by the German post-dramatic tradition, work that emphasizes narraturgy as one of the chief manners in which the theatricality of the work is deployed. And what results perhaps is a total, to use the crude term, mindfuck for an actor to have to walk through. It could be posited that if only Latinx actors connected with all the respective levels of cultural mestizaje, they would then be able to be more fully able to dive into the kinds of works that ask of them to tap into so-called alternative structures, which are not alternative at all, but simply another way of thinking about and making theater. However, what complicates this supposition is that on a daily basis, Latinx actors are being asked to usually do several things at once. Play a version of Latinidad for white dominant culture, read ethnically ambiguous enough to be cast in a wide variety of roles, sublimate their own unique relationship to being Latinx against cultural expectations of what being Latinx means, both within and outside Latinx theater and film circles, and seek white adjacent status in order to obtain enough industry credentials to greenlight, author, or power their own projects into existence. It is a lot. Bilingualism and telenovelas. Not all Latinx actors are bilingual, Spanish, English. In fact, many Latinx actors in the United States grew up in non-Spanish-speaking households and or in environments where spoken Spanish was penalized in the school system. For that matter, not all Latinx playwrights in the United States write in Spanglish or choose to do so. Yet often the stereotype is that a typical sentence by a Latinx writer will look something like this, and bear in mind that I'm exaggerating to make a point. Mi abuela walked to the tienda and she bought some arepas for the fiesta because she prayed to Santa Barbara to give her the mojo to get through the día in one piece. Okay, nothing complicated necessarily about this sentence, other than a cadence is expected, a certain kind of Latinx rhythmic delivery. Let me flip this another way. I was in a rehearsal room once with a British theater director working on a piece about Latinx characters, and the first thing he told the cast, all white British from various places in Britain, is that they had to play my text with a Latine accent, because clearly, even though my text was written entirely in English, if they did not do so, the rhythm would be off. Whose rhythm? Is there a specific identifiable Latinx rhythm? Does it sound like gongas and cowbells? You get my meaning. Blanket assumptions are often leveled at Latinx actors that will easily act between and intra languages when this is not always the case or should be. The assumptions also include what I like to call tacking an easy SNS to Latinx speech in plays. Hey, mi ese, ¿cómo va? An SNS that may or may not have anything to do with the play at hand. Just like when actors are asked to perform their Latinidad through gesture, vocabulary, and behaviors on stage and on film, so too they are often asked to perform actual languages with which they may not be fluent. And fluency in Spanish opens the can of worms that is the many kinds of Spanish that are spoken in the Americas, and rhythms that may not be organic to the material or even to them as performers. This leads us to the problematic semiotics of the telenovela, which seems to haunt Latinx writing and dramaturgy as much as magic realism does. Now, obviously, the telenovela is a contemporary iteration of melodrama. Latine telenovelas, especially the ones filmed in Mexico City, in their heyday had a studied, heightened, knowingly cheesy kind of acting for the camera that was easily parodied and conveniently used as a shortcut when describing Latinx theatrical work as a whole. Somehow, the ubiquity of this marker extended to an assumption that all Latinx actors know in their bones, excuse me, how to play telenovela and lean into those tropes. Nothing can be further from the truth, and it is high time to stop acting Latinx actors to be experts in something other than what they bring to the table as individual performers, be it language or a specific form of drama, simply because they are Latinx. The playground. There are many acting methods, among them those attributed to Stanislavski, Adler, Strasberg, Meisner, Gretowski, Boal, and Suzuki. Actors train at a variety of methods to strengthen their physical and emotional instruments, deepen their skill sets, and expand their sensibilities as creative people. Training programs at the college, university, and conservatory level focus to varying degrees on preparing actors for careers in theater, film, and television. At root, the goal is to encourage actors to be ready to play. But what is the act of play? Legendary game designer and fun theorist Bernie de Koven centered the act of play, the imagination. A game was always understood to be an act of engagement between the player and the game. Neurotypical and neurodivergent children embrace and experience play in different ways. The playground, though, to cite de Koven, is infinite, not only because the realm of play has infinite variables and approaches, but also because the imagination in the playground, in the room of play, which is the theater, is unbounded and free. So here is my utopian proposition. Actor and writing training programs need recenter their pedagogy around the infinite, while acknowledging the truths and varied complex experiences of every individual that is in the practice room or hall, and thus enable true liberation for all. And that is my essay from the wonderful book, Latinx Actor Training, edited by Cynthia Santos de Cure and Mike Espinosa. It's published by Routledge, and it was published in 2023. Wonderful book on Latinx Actor Training. And that is today's episode. As always, this is about you and I in this theater, you there in the dark, and I here wondering who you are. Thanks for listening to Day for Night.